Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Life Rewired podcast. And thank you guys for joining us on this Monday, July 31st. Very similar to how we did our episode with Christina a couple of weeks ago. She is actually going to be diving into some interview questions and interviewing me. A little bit of a different style than what we normally do, but we thought that this would be a good opportunity for you guys to really just hear about our background, our story, kind of where, you know, we've kind of been in the past and how we've gotten to where we ultimately are today. And we're super stoked. We've upgraded. Made a little bit of an upgrade and got some new microphones. So hoping that the sound is super crisp for you guys. You know, we really take a lot of pride in high quality and really just wanted to bring you guys the absolute best. And all of you that have been following along, you know, in our journey this entire time, you guys know that we started out just, you know, using literally like voice memos on our computer. Back when I, you know, started the podcast myself, now with Chris and I, doing this together, you know, we really want to bring you guys just the best quality. So hoping you guys enjoy today's episode. But before we begin, this episode is brought to you by Nash Nutrition. The Nash Bar is made with simple and nourishing ingredients, 20 grams of protein, and is naturally sweetened with honey and dates. And what a lot of people don't realize is that most of the healthy protein bars that you find on the market are in fact heavily processed. You know, we talk about green labeling a lot. And unfortunately, this is just the way it is with a lot of these protein bars where, you know, you're going to see all the marketing on the front of the label saying they're healthy, they're, you know, nutritious, they're full of protein. But at the end of the day, you know, the truth really lies in the ingredients. And this is why we love the Nash bars. We never even have to think twice about the ingredients. And they truly are the good for you protein bar and are packed with high quality ingredients. And make sure you guys head to the show notes after today's episode so you can get yourself a box of bars to try. So on to today's episode.
On today's episode, I'm going to be interviewing the one and only Zachary Tenor, co-host of Life Rewired, owner of Everyday Athletes Coaching, and my fiance, if you did not know. So on today's episode, I'm really excited for you guys to get to hear Zach's story, because the first time I heard this story, I've heard it, I think I said this on the podcast episode previously, but I've heard Zach's story. I feel like I could recite it myself just because there's so many pivotal points that I've got to memorize, because the first time I heard this story, I remember saying like, wow, this is a guy I've never met anyone like this before. Like the way he has leaned into personal development and overcome adversity. I think the first time he told me a story, I'm like, oh my gosh, I love this man. It was like on our first coffee date. I was just like, his story is so unique. Like the work ethic, the passion behind everything, and his commitment to himself, to growth, and to his family too. You'll hear that throughout this podcast too, which is something I admire so much. So I can't wait for you guys to hear this story. I think that a lot of people, especially former athletes, will relate to a lot of this story, and I won't get too caught up in spilling the beans on your story, but I'm really excited for everyone to hear from your perspective. So I think I want to take this all the way back to what brought you here to Columbus the first time. So your full background story through growing up in St. Louis, sports, coming to Columbus the first time around, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, it's super crazy. I played sports really my whole life, but as I started to get into like the later years of just my early childhood, grade school life, my dad was like, hey, you should try this, you know, sport of lacrosse. And I was in seventh grade at the time. No one even knew what the hell lacrosse was. Like it was just coming out to the Midwest finally. Like it was mostly just something in the East Coast and in Canada where it was really popular. But I mean, I didn't even know what it was when he told me about it back in seventh grade. And that's really when, you know, I started playing lacrosse for the first time, seventh, eighth grade. And then my parents didn't let me play football at a super young age. So I actually started playing football in eighth grade before high school. And then as I transitioned into high school, I kind of opened up to a wider just group of guys. I went to a big all guys school in St. Louis, Missouri called Christian Brothers College High School. And this is where I really just deepened my love for athletics. And it was a very competitive high school. So you really kind of had to rise to the occasion. I remember coming in from like just like a very normal like grade school, eighth grade team, and coming in and there's like all this politics going on. Like these guys were from this, you know, young youth program that was like elite. And then these guys from this group, and we were all just coming together in this, you know, high school program. And that's really where I got my first taste for like decently high level athletics. And so, you know, I went to CBC, and as I progressed throughout my time there, I actually wrestled my freshman year. I don't really talk about that a whole lot, but I did wrestle my freshman year. And then I got like that horrible cauliflower ear, like three or four times back to back to back. And I'm like, damn, like if I'm only like half of a year into the sport and I'm already getting this shit, like this is not a good sign. So basically I just really focused in on lacrosse and football. And as I started getting into my later years, you know, junior year, senior year, starting to play you know, on varsity and starting to earn a lot of like local accolades. I also ended up, you know, becoming an All-American for lacrosse and was like All-State, All-Conference, all that stuff for football and lacrosse. And recruitment just kind of started taking off. And there was one specific, you know, thing that really took the recruitment off, which was this basically like a select lacrosse team that was going on in St. Louis, where a coach from the East Coast came to Missouri. Honestly, I don't even know why. I was really close with this coach, but for some reason he came to Missouri from the East Coast, and he had like all these connections with college coaches and just big connections in the lacrosse community. And I remember he basically created this select team called Missouri 22, where the whole catch was like everybody in the whole entire state of Missouri could try out, and only 22 kids were going to make it. And basically like all the like trips that you would go on and whatnot would be completely free. And, you know, my parents were never going to put me through some of these select lacrosse, basically like clubs where you'd spend like thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars just to play like this summer league. And a lot of it was a money trap. Like a lot of these coaches would be like, you're going to get all this exposure to D1 programs and all this quite literal bullshit. And like we just weren't going to do it. And so during that time, I was really focused on football primarily. But when he created this league, it kind of opened up the lacrosse recruitment for me. Like I would have never even gone to Ohio State if it wasn't for this literal circumstance. And so craziest, this kind of just falls into the line of the whole story in general, but I did not even intend on trying out for this. And I was at one of my best friend's houses the night before. It was like a Friday night. The tryout was Saturday morning. And I remember like going to a buddy's house. I had zero intentions of going to this tryout. And, you know, my high school lacrosse coach at the time, Eddie Condon, was like, called me Saturday morning, like, Zach, where the hell are you? Like, he's a real emphatical guy, hilarious guy. And he was like, you got to get your ass up here and try out for this team. And so I was like, okay, yeah, fine. Like, I'll do it. And then so I literally end up showing up and just having an absolute blast. Like, there was like all these college coaches there. And I just remember like going into it. And this is what's so funny is like, sometimes we get so anxious and worked up about opportunities that it causes us to fail. And like, I was so relaxed and laid back going into this that I honestly just had like this killer tryout. And I remember like the Duke coach or one of the Duke coaches that were there at the time, like told like my high school coach and then the high school coach that ran this whole thing, like that kid's the best one at this camp or at this tryout. And then that's when like Rutgers, they actually started like hitting me up like weekly for lacrosse, and they had like offered me to play lacrosse at Rutgers. And then I was getting recruited by, ironically, Michigan and Ohio State. And I remember at the time, like, I always wanted to go to a big school. And for football, I was getting recruited by like some smaller D1 schools, like MAC schools. I remember like Northern Illinois was like literally where I was going to go and play football if it wasn't for lacrosse. Like, that was probably like, you know, the best opportunity I had. They were the most interested. It was a pretty good D1 program. And so basically, like, I always wanted to go to a big school. And so all this lacrosse recruitment took off, and it just absolutely fired me up about the potential of going to one of these big schools. And so that's when I started to communicate with like Michigan and Ohio State, because Rutgers was like super exciting, but it wasn't exactly what I wanted. And then I remember I got in touch with Nick Myers at Ohio State, and he's like, yeah, come out for a visit. It was ironically kind of like unofficial at the time. And then when I got here, and like, it was a great visit, and I sat down with him at the end of the trip, he actually offered me, like, he literally offered me, he's like, hey, we can give you X amount of money, you know, for a scholarship. We'd love to have you. And that's when I was just like, holy shit, like, I could literally play at Ohio State. Like, this is kind of like my dream come true. And I remember coming out to Columbus. It was just like, I fell in love with this city, very different from St. Louis, in my opinion, way better. We've talked about this, but yeah, so that's really kind of what led me to Ohio State, coming in 2013, my freshman year, on a lacrosse scholarship. And then, yeah, that's what brought me to Columbus.
And here we are. And I'm glad that it was lacrosse that brought you here, because I know with football, you could have been at any other school and we would have never crossed paths. But something that you mentioned that I think shocked me the first time I heard it was that you didn't start playing football. And I was like a Pee Wee cheerleader my whole life and here throughout college. And to hear you didn't even start playing football till like eighth grade, do you think that like a huge part of your story is like adversity? Do you think that made you feel like you were behind in any way, or did it push you just to go a lot harder to perform and like catch up to all your other teammates?
Yeah, not really. I mean, I didn't feel like I was like disadvantaged in any way. I honestly just felt like, kind of like I was saying, going into high school, it was just like you're in this pool of all these really talented guys, and it's like you kind of just rise to that level. And that's kind of what I did.
I think that prepared you a lot for the kind of people you were surrounded by when you got to the football side of things at Ohio State. So walk us through a little bit, which I think is such a cool part of your story too, taking the leap from lacrosse, where you had a scholarship to a walk-on at Ohio State for football.
Yeah, what's so crazy about that experience is like it defines literally who I am right now. And in the moment, you don't realize that. I just remember being in an adverse situation where, you know, I had thought that this was the way to go. Like I thought lacrosse was it. And, you know, Ohio State was definitely it. I was in love with this university. I just remember early on in my freshman year playing lacrosse, I just had this like crazy gut feeling. And it, looking back, like I was not a self-aware human. Like I was so unself-aware as like a young, immature kind of just idiot. And it's so crazy to think that like somehow I was able to understand this gut feeling that I was having where I was just like, man, I just miss the game of football like so much. Like I miss it so much. And I think my whole entire high school career, I always had both. And this was like the first time in my life where I was literally not playing football. And this is where it really hit me that like, I fucking love football. And it was very much so like, I need to either try to play both or I need to go pivot and try this football thing out just to be sure. And at the time I was really thinking about potentially transferring. Like that was honestly like my first kind of go-to thought, because all these guys I was playing with, even at Ohio State my freshman year, these guys were like transferring left and right. Like guys were going to like, you know, transferring from Ohio State men's lacrosse to like Boston University. Guys were going to like Loyola. Like just some of my friends were like kind of just literally going all over the place. And so I started, you know, getting in touch with some colleges and my high school coach. I was like, hey, like, I really am, you know, having this feeling. I really need some guidance. I need some help here. Like, what direction should I take? And so he was kind of getting me back into the groove of like talking to coaches and whatnot about potentially transferring. And then I just remember like through a lot of talks with like my family and my parents especially, it was just very evident that like I did not want to leave Ohio State. Like I knew how cool and how amazing this university was and this city in general. And I did not want to leave. And that was kind of my answer there, where it's like, well, you know, if I don't want to leave, what's the next best option? And ironically, at the time, the only guy that I knew on the football team was Ezekiel Elliott, because he was from St. Louis. I was from St. Louis. We met each other on recruiting trips. We actually met each other at a party in high school. And then it was like, it was like one of those situations where it's like, you're going to Ohio State for lacrosse. Like I'm going to Ohio State for football. And we, you know, kind of hit it off and became friends ever since. But he was the first one I reached out to in talks with my coaches. And he was like, yeah, man, like, I really do think, you know, you have a shot. Like, you could definitely play special teams. Like, he just sent like a text back after I was like, hey, man, like, what do you think my chances are? And so that really kind of boosted my confidence. Like, here's a high level guy that's on the team already that knows how I was as a football player in high school. Like, you know, this is really a really good opportunity for me. And also on top of that, luckily, like, there was a kid from my high school at the time getting recruited by Ohio State. And my coach, my high school coach, was in touch with one of the coaches for Ohio State. And that was kind of my in. He basically like sent that guy, you know, my film, my tape. They offered me the opportunity to walk on to the football team. And kind of before that, preliminarily, like I was talking to my lacrosse coach, obviously, and like Nick Myers at Ohio State, and he was very supportive. I had a big long talk with him in his office about all of this. And he was like, look, if you're, you know, having these feelings, like it's for a reason and you need to chase, you know, these feelings. And so that's basically when I decided to take the leap, where, you know, logistically it was kind of funky. Like we were trying to figure out if I could play both at first, but it was like something with like the scholarship where basically like they'd have to like take me off scholarship. It was really weird where they'd have to like take me off scholarship from lacrosse when I was playing football. And then I could be put back on it potentially if I came back to lacrosse. So it was just like this weird kind of like administrative situation. And I was so hell bent on like playing football again that I was kind of just like, all right, let's just do this thing. And so, you know, I decided to quit the lacrosse team. My parents were supportive. I lost my scholarship, obviously, because I wasn't playing lacrosse anymore. And then here I was to join, you know, this football team with a crazy ass goal, you know, of actually playing. Like there was a lot of walk-ons where, you know, it was a big deal just to like be a walk-on at Ohio State. But I was like, I don't want to just be a walk-on. I want to get on that damn field. Like I want to play. Like I'm not just doing this to say I was a part of Ohio State football. Like, no, I'm gonna get on the damn field. And little did I know, it was going to be like the most outrageously hard thing I've ever done in my whole life. Because you like think you're so good and you're like, oh, I was a stellar, you know, all state, all conference, all whatever high school athlete. And you get to college, it does not fucking matter. Like you are literally like lowest of the low and you have to work insanely hard to even like prove you should even be there. Like not just like, just even earn the opportunity to like exist inside of the program. So yeah, in 2014, my sophomore year, I decided to quit the lacrosse team, walk on the football team, and start at literally ground zero.
And what a nice year to do that.
Yeah, we won the national championship.
What I think is really cool is that while this may seem like such like a triumphant moment, like you make the football team, it was literally just the beginning of your story of adversity. So from that moment that you walked on, were you like, oh my gosh, I made it? Or were you like, now I have to do the work?
Yeah, so you don't realize, like, at least I didn't know, like, how crazy competitive high-level Division I football was. Like, you kind of just, like, you kind of think it is, but, like, you don't really understand it until you're in it. And so I was very naive of, like, I'm going to get on the field. Like, my first year in the program, like, I'm going to get on the field. I'm going to play on special teams. I'm going to play at linebacker. Like, I'm going to get a scholarship. Like, I had literally had written these goals down, and I had them on a piece of paper that was in my pocket when I was literally training the whole summer to walk on and join the team in the fall. And it was just a rude awakening. You know, you join this team, and like, when I talk about the lowest of the low, I'm talking like I was literally a practice squad guy. Like, I did not even get invited to stand on the sidelines at games. Like, you literally, there's a list of people. I remember seeing it. It was the most, like, felt, made me feel like shit. But you would look at this like list of the 130, 125 guys on the team. And, you know, you had like your 50, 60, you know, travel guys, you had like 70 scholarship guys. And then you basically had this pool of like 40 guys, 30, 40 guys that were just like literally practice squad guys. Like, your purpose was literally to practice. Like, I didn't even get in, like, I was literally getting tickets. It literally said on the piece of paper, tickets in the stands. And it was a list of like walk-ons and like people that would literally just wait in the stands. So like, you literally, I joined this team with these big dreams, and it's like, you just get kicked in the face of like, no, like, you are going to start off here. Like, you are far away from where you think you were going to be. And that's, you know, really where adversity hit. And I'm like, this is going to be a long fucking road.
Yeah. And I think that knowing you now, like, this made you who you are today, and it helped you overcome adversity in all areas. And I want to walk through a couple of like big pivotal moments. Like, if you had to pick like a couple of moments where like it really changed the trajectory of you walking not only onto the team, but like you actually playing, like, what would those moments be? Like, where you really started to see like all of your hard work pay off, and like the coaches start to notice, and it all start to fall into place.
Yeah. So I kind of just started getting strategic, because at first you're just like, I'm just going to go hard as hell all the time just to try to get noticed and practice. 'Cause that was my only shot, was practice. And so what I started to realize was, you know, Urban Meyer took special teams incredibly seriously. Like, he coached the units. Like, at other schools, they just have some special teams guy just like, you know, doing his thing. But at Ohio State, like, Urban Meyer was literally like front lines. He would decide, handpick who was literally on these special teams units. And so he was watching and dissecting the film. And so I was obviously on the other side of things. I was on the scout team. And I knew that these coaches would like really, really analyze these reps, like the reps with the starting, you know, punt team, starting kickoff team, like, you know, basically, even though they were dissecting film on the starters, who was on the other side? It was guys like me. And so I knew over time, over like, you know, the first year is like survival mode. I barely was even hanging on. And then like year two, you kind of understand how shit works, you know, but you're still nobody. Like, nobody even wants you there. Like, the coaches literally, like, you're a complete afterthought, because like some of these coaches, their job is literally to get the guys that they recruited onto the field. And if they don't get those guys that they recruited onto the field, they look bad. And so it's like, not only is that a motivator, but on top of that, like, you're just a walk-on, like, you're taking up space. Like, you literally are like an afterthought. Like, people literally don't like you. Like, it's literally how the culture is. Now the players did, we had a lot of good players that were nice guys. So luckily, like, you weren't just completely treated like shit, but you were very much so an afterthought. And so I realized over time that these coaches were watching this film, and I'm like, I know they're going to watch these plays, so I have to make them count. I have to, like, I know they're going to be analyzing this, so I got to win these reps. And so, like, I started just, like, in those moments in practice, I'm like, I don't care if I look like, you know, the asshole going against the starter that's going to, like, you know, make them better. Like, I'm going to show what I got on film. And so in realizing that, I just started putting good reps out there. And, like, Urban Meyer every now and then would be like, you know, who's this guy? Like, what is that? What is going on here? Like, who is this? And then like those comments kept happening and kept happening and kept happening. And then it happened so much, I was like, I'm going to just make it so hard for them not to notice me. And so like, I was really just thinking strategically about where are they going to watch in this practice that matters the most? How can I capitalize on those moments? And then how can I be so noticeable on that tape so often that they have no choice but to put to notice me. And that's really when, you know, I kind of went from that nobody to like, this is meat. Like everybody was calling me meat because I was just this big freaking meaty guy. And that's when like Urban had me stand up and like everybody had kind of already given me that nickname. And I remember him, like Urban had me stand up in a meeting and everyone, or he was like, who is this guy? Like on the tape. And he's like, stand up, whoever this is. And then, so I stood up and everybody's like, me, like doing like a chant or whatever. And then, you know, he had obviously acknowledged me at that point. I kind of went from like a complete nobody to like kind of somebody. And then that was a whole nother thing. You know, that took me from getting no chance to ever playing to becoming like third string on special teams. So like, you know, a lot of people think like, oh, special teams, like they just throw anybody out there. We literally had like second string, third string, fourth string, literally like fifth string guys on special teams units. And so basically that act kind of took me from being a complete nobody to being like almost kind of playing on special teams.
I love that.
So I wasn't quite there yet, but it got me like really close.
Yeah. And I think what's cool is like anyone listening, like even if they're not a former athlete, can relate to that, like whether they're trying to compete for a promotion at work, like putting in those reps where it's important, I think is a huge lesson to be learned from that. And I know you had a good support system. Like I love a story of you and Justin kind of banding together, and that shows like the power of like support and just like accountability. So you want to talk about that, like one conversation you guys had?
Yeah, I remember basically like how I just described, you know, I was right on that brink. I was kind of like teetering between like second, third string on these special teams units. And basically like if you got, well, I would say third string, because once you got to like second string, like you could go in the fucking game. Like if you're a two deep guy on any of those units, because he played a lot of starters. So like a guy goes down, like you are legitimately going in and they have to like trust you because it's like a lot of shit is on the line. So it's like there's a lot of trust, you know, between you and these coaches. And so I was always kind of like third string. And I remember I was just like trying so hard to push into that too deep because then I would travel, you know, I would be potentially going in the game. So I was like third string on some of these units. And I remember going into my senior year and I had all these coaches, they'd always be like, you're going to get your shot. You're going to get your shot. But it never did. And I remember I was literally going into what would have been my senior year. And it was technically like my redshirt junior year, because I ended up playing like another semester. I was at Ohio State for 4.5 years, like not 5 years, but 4.5, since football is in the fall. You only have to do half a semester to play another year, technically. But this literally was going into my senior year and I still hadn't gotten on the field. Like it was like 2.5, 3 years gone by and I still haven't reached this goal. And that's when I was having like serious conversations with my parents. Like, I really don't think I can do this anymore. Like this is literally, because, you know, for any of the listeners out there, like, we don't get a break. Like normal college students get like, what is it, like 2 months off for Christmas, something ridiculous, or like a month off for Christmas, something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, it's a whole month for Christmas. And then for summer, you get like all three, like June, July, August.
Yeah, we got none of that. Zero. We were literally would get like 4 or 5 days at home around Christmas. And one time we were actually practicing on Christmas in a bowl game. So like we did not get a break. Our only break out of the whole entire year was spring break. Like that was the 1 week that we got 1 week a year off. 1 week. And so here's all your friends, all these people you know, siblings getting a fucking month off. And I'm like, what the hell am I even doing? Like I'm literally sacrificing basically my whole life for this. And, you know, I still haven't gotten to this goal. So this was that point where, you know, adversity was really like really starting to hit. And I was having those serious conversations like with my parents. Like I really think like this is my last shot. Like if things don't work out, like I'm going to quit this team. Like I'm giving way too much, like batting my head against the wall and I can't get there. And at the time, Justin, one of my best friends, you know, literally going to be the best man at my wedding. He was going through adversity himself, you know, going through a lot of different injuries. He was a 5-star athlete coming out of high school, like, which is insane. And he was battling all these different injuries. He hadn't really gotten on the field much yet. And so we were kind of in the same boat. I was kind of battling things as a walk-on. He was battling things as a scholarship athlete. And going into that senior year, we had obviously grown a very close friendship. And so we were like in the hotel together at camp. And fall camp is pretty much where like decisions are made. Like this is going to make or break if you actually are someone who plays or not. Like once the season hits, they've kind of decided who's going to play. And at this time, me and him banded together and we basically just told each other like, yo, let's hold each other accountable, keep each other positive. Like literally no matter what happens, like fuck everything else, all the shit we can't control, the coach's decisions, everything. We are just going to make a pact to like give this thing our absolute all, like everything we got, like not, because sometimes, you know, when you're a little, you kind of play on the safe side when you're in that victim mindset where it's like, you know, you don't really give it your all when you're in that victim mindset. You kind of play on the safe side of things. So you play a little bit reserve where you're like, oh, fuck this coach, or like, you know, God, this person, like I'm not playing because of this person. And you can let that completely debilitate you. And I did for years. And so we just banded together and we're like, we're going to give it everything we got, leave all the chips on the table. And I knew at that moment, like I would walk away from that experience knowing, you know, if I didn't get a shot that I gave it my all and I could leave, I could walk away from it, or, you know, I would get this chance and this opportunity to play. And so either way, we were like, it's a win-win. I'm going to give it my all and let the chips fall where they may. And literally that camp is when I got bumped up to second string and we had a guy go down. And then that was when my opportunity to start on special teams, going into that fall camp, going into that first game against Bowling Green. It was on my birthday. It was the first game I played in. And I just remember like after the game, just like crying my eyes out. Cause I was like years and years and years and years of all this hard work. And it's like, I did it. Like I finally did it. And it was just surreal. And so that's what was so cool about that time, was like, it did end up working in my favor. And I think that that's what taught me so much when I got into entrepreneurship, and whenever I take on a very ambitious goal or opportunity, you know, we can look at it as everything that could go wrong, or we can give it our all. And if shit goes wrong, we learned. If shit goes right, we win. And at the end of the day, like it's a win-win. But most people, you know, see those opportunities as a lose-lose, where it's like, you know, no matter what, I'm going to feel like shit about myself, or like you talk yourself out of it. But it's like, no, just give it your all. If you fail, you learned. If you were successful and if you got your way, then you won. But either way, it's a win-win, because you either win or you learn.
Agreed. And I think that mindset is everything. And I think that a huge thing that holds people back is that self-sabotage. Like you said, like you were putting in so much time and effort, and like year round, it was like a job, like full time. And for you to say like, I'm about to quit just as you're about to start, would have been like sabotaging.
Devastating.
Like, it's such an important year for you and season of life for you. And I always picture that like meme of that guy, like, you know, he's like in the mine, like the yep. coal mine. He's
yeah,
like
chipping away.
He turns around right before that. And I think that's what a lot of people do. And it kind of goes hand in hand with what we do with our clients too. And the things we, you know, motivate them by saying like, control the controllables, give it your all. And at the end of the day, like your mindset is truly everything. So like, what advice would you give to someone who's facing adversity, whether that's in their fitness journey or like in a position like you were in, where like you were giving it your all and it consumed your whole life, and like you could have easily just thrown in the towel?
You just have to see that bigger picture goal and that vision. Like, you have to hold on to that. And if you can hold on to that, you'd be so shocked at how you can dig deep and push through those moments. Because I had this vision of playing for this team. I had a vision of being on that field, like being in front of those, you know, 110,000 people. Like, I had that vision. It was in my brain. Like, I could literally see myself on that field playing in those games. And in those hard, most difficult, most challenging, most adverse moments, that's what I could dig deep to. It was kind of like my bag that I could dig deep into and be like, that's why I'm doing this. And, you know, like you said, it fits so perfectly with what we do as fitness coaches, where, you know, you're not always going to feel like making the healthy meal, eating the healthy meal. You're not always going to feel like going in, getting the workout in. But you have that vision of the higher goal and the higher achievement that you're working toward. And that's what pushes you through those small emotional in the moment kind of moments of the journey. And that's what always pushed me through, was that vision. I had that vision, and that vision was more powerful than the adversity that I was experiencing right now.
I love that. And I think that's such a powerful statement too, that we'll get a lot of people through like just like the tedious things we have to do day in and day out. And you may not see the benefit in the moment, but like the compound effect is truly everything. It can relate to any area of life. And I think that that's made you who you are today, because I see it in how you do one thing, how you do everything. We talk about that all the time, like with how we eat and how we budget and how we do our business. And I think that that's why a lot of athletes over time become entrepreneurs, because it's just the life you've lived. Like, you work year round, you work constantly and just strive for that like elite mentality. So I want you to walk us through after that season of football, like post-athletics, like where were you mentally and physically?
Yeah, so basically, you know, going from that year, I had one final season after that. So luckily, like, you know, I got my chance finally, but then I was really able to maximize it my senior year. And I had no idea that I never had the goal really, or even vision that I could play in the NFL. Like, I always just thought like, you know, college was the biggest thing that I was going to do at a D1 school. But going into that senior year, like, not just kind of like playing, but like really making plays, like very big plays, it was becoming very evident that like maybe I could literally do this at the next level. And like coaches were telling me that, like scouts were telling me that, like opportunities were starting to arise where like I could potentially play in the NFL. And that's when, you know, I decided like, you know, I was going to train for pro day. I was going to do pro day at Ohio State, run my 40, do the bench press, all that stuff, do the position drills in front of the coaches, which also was insane. That's a whole nother kind of opportunity and story. But yeah, basically like ended up doing pro day, you know, got some looks from the coaches. And at the time I had a torn ligament in my foot. So I was literally like, you know, running 40-yard dashes. And every time I was doing like the pro day prep, I just kept re-injuring it. So I ended up like literally running my 40 on pro day, ended up running a 4.69, which really is not bad for a linebacker, you know, around a 4.640. I did the 225 test, like I think it was 26 times. So I had like a really good pro day, all with a torn metatarsal literally in my foot, which was the most excruciating pain. I couldn't even walk after it. And then I got an opportunity to do a workout with the Cleveland Browns. And then I was kind of in talks with some individual from the Steelers, and then it just kind of fizzled out. And that's where it was kind of like, shit, you know, like I was able to achieve this awesome thing at Ohio State. Kind of the next thing in line was to do, you know, to play pro and to try to make an NFL team. And when that was kind of short lived, you know, and my body was really fighting back, it was like, all right, you know, I really have to kind of focus on that next thing. And I really didn't have a strong foundation of what that next thing was going to be. I really kind of let, because like I was so focused for so long on reaching that goal of playing at Ohio State that I kind of just put all my chips in. Like I literally just pushed all my chips into that achievement. And when it left and football left for good, it was really humbling. And I went through, you know, a lot of adversity and like a lot of struggle initially, just trying to find, you know, my purpose again and trying to find fulfillment again, because, you know, playing the sport your whole life, it's like all you know, and it's such a vital part of who you are. And I did let it become who I was and part of my identity, that when that leaves you, your identity leaves you and a big piece of you is missing. And that's where I was really struggling. Even like the couple years following, like doing my MBA, like back home, that was something where like I didn't even realize it in the moment, but I was really struggling. Like I was really, you know, going through it mentally with like, you know, what is my purpose? Like, what am I even doing? You know, trying to figure things out. And I remember that was a really trying time. And it took me kind of stumbling and falling through, you know, a sales job and not really enjoying that and trying different internships, like one miserable one with the PGA, like we talked about, the operations management internship, like just did a lot of shitty jobs to finally stumble my way into what now I truly do feel like is my purpose and what I'm meant to do and meant to help other former athletes that, you know, were going through that same transition that I went through. And I knew that, you know, the number one thing above all else that like always was a constant in my life, like even during football, even as a young kid, even, you know, in post football, when I was going through it with like this whole mental struggle of finding my identity, finding my purpose again, was training. It was always working out, and working out has always been the foundation, you know, that's kind of held me together through every single season of my life. And, you know, it's kind of ironic that it was staring me down this whole time. And I even know me and you, I literally found like, I got a new laptop and I found like notes in the past that talked about like becoming a trainer. I even had it written in my journal that I would write in for football. And it's just insane how all that kind of led me, you know, to where I am now.
And I'm like such a big advocate for having like goals and a vision and these like lists, like tangibly or on your computer, because looking back, like it was staring you right in the face, and like old you is talking to future you. But before I dive into like how you transitioned into creating Everyday Athlete and getting to where you are with your purpose now, I know that a lot of former athletes that you coach now had similar struggles to what you did, like in that season of life, like where you lost your identity to where you were like, oh, fitness gives me that same feeling of, you know, competing and pushing myself and having that like elite mentality. Like, what were your biggest struggles and how did you find the solution of like working out and doing personal development?
Yeah, I just remember like, you know, going through this, you're just like not taught how to prepare for it. Like your whole life, you're only taught like how to prepare for your sport. It's the only thing you think about every single waking hour of every single day. It's like, you're focused on your sport, you're focused on progress in the sport, learning the plays, doing all this shit. And you know, when you leave that, there's no playbook for how to navigate life after football, life after sports in general. And so I just remember like, you know, really trying to look inward. And I know that this is something that I always encourage, you know, my former athlete clients to do, you know, when they are feeling lost like this. But the only way for you to get clear on what that direction is to go so hard inward and like really look into like, what do I actually like? What do I actually enjoy? What do I actually, you know, feel energized by? Like, what brings me joy? You know, what fires me up? What brings me down energetically? And, you know, you really do just have to get almost like insanely self-aware to be able to even discover like what that next thing is or where you can even pivot toward. And the other thing that is like a big, just like mind fuck is like, there's just limitless shit you can do. Like there's so much different things, so many different things you can try. And, you know, when we become defined by this sport, you know, we kind of like walk on eggshells where it's like, this is my identity. This is who I am. I can't go be like the basketball player. Like I can't just go try and be like a basketball player. Like I'm the football guy. And so like when you're now trying to figure out like what to do with your life and you're trying all these different jobs, like you have to really push the ego aside because like you have that inner athlete in you like thinking and telling yourself almost like, this is who I am. So if I get into this job, that's now who I am. Or if I try this thing, that's now who I am. But in reality, you have to go through those things. You have to, it almost like brings you back to like the very nuanced time where you were trying a bunch of different sports as a youth athlete. Like I played, you know, like I said, I wrestled, I played lacrosse, I played football, I played baseball, I played soccer, I played all these different sports. And I had to discover that football and lacrosse and football ultimately were it. And like, I didn't find that out, you know, just through like jumping right into it. Like I had to try those different sports. And so like, we almost have to do the same thing in our life after sport, where it's like, we have to try these different things. I had to try, you know, sales. I had to try, you know, the operations. I had to try, you know, these different jobs to be able to understand what I really ultimately wanted.
I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to like have it figured out the first time around. That's where a lot of people can get like resentful of like whatever career they're in or just get stagnant or settle for like something that really isn't fulfilling. I know personal development was a huge piece of that for you, but what do you think? I want to now walk through like how you left a quote like comfy sales job where you were absolutely crushing it. This is when Zach and I met. So like I'm seeing him like when we first met and we were talking about like what we do and he's like the top sales rep like in the area at such a young age and you in the pandemic leave like a comfy job to become an entrepreneur. So like walk us through how you got there, like how you followed your gut once again. So it's like leaving lacrosse for football where you had nothing promised. You had a comfy position, a scholarship. Same thing with this. You had a comfy salary. You were killing it from the outside looking in, but like you knew internally that like there was something more for you. So like walk us through what that looked like.
Yeah, the feeling, honestly, like my feeling of like anxiety toward the job I was doing and like even sometimes like even depressive feelings of just like being absolutely miserable is honestly were the catalyst that pushed me into this because like it had to get so miserable to yield change. Like I literally could not have kept going. Like I could not have stayed. You saw me at my worst, like when I was really struggling and just like I like waking up miserable, going on these work trips, miserable, like having to drive instead of fly and during the pandemic and like not wanting to do it and like having all this pressure. Cause like, you know, as a sales rep, you're just focused on yourself. And I was so young, like I was like 24, like 20, 23, 24 as a sales rep. And then I was literally like the youngest sales manager in the company at 25, where like now you go from just managing your sales to like, oh, now this guy, their results and their outcomes are totally dependent on you. Like, yes, we are going to care about what they do, but at the end of the day, it's on my ass, like on how they're performing. And so that was just like a shit ton of pressure, you know, to take on it at a younger age. And I just remember like, I did not handle it well emotionally. And it was just like a lot of pressure on me. So not only did like the job and the work in and of itself have a lot of like pressure and demands, but all during this time, I was like feeling serious, deep feelings of just like lack of purpose, lack of fulfillment, like really starting to feel like depressed about life in general. Cause I'm just like, I'm never going to feel that again. I was riding the highest of the highs that I could have ever ridden. And then you just now are like really just back to everyday Zach, ironically, everyday athlete. But anyway, it was just a very adverse time. And I just remember it got so intense, like those emotions. I remember even like literally like feeling like almost like anxiety attacks, like literally in these hotel rooms, just like balled up miserable about like my whole entire situation. And it took getting to that level of discomfort to push me out of it, where I was like, I literally, like, I would literally rather quit this job, like, over six figures as, you know, a young kid and, like, all this bullshit that people focus way too much on. Like, I was, like, it was, by a lot of definitions, stupid to leave that. But I was so literally miserable that I was willing to literally make no money and just be out of that job than to stay in the position that I was in. Like, literally, it was to that degree. And when we get to those points, you know, we have that decision. We either, you know, let the external world around us, society, the societal pressures of like what we think we should do. Like, I could have let that take over and probably gone down an even darker path. Or I say, fuck it. I'm going to do what I need to do for myself internally for how I am feeling. And that's where it just got real serious that I need to now make a change. I need to actually do something that's going to make me happy. And at that moment, I chose happiness over a salary.
Yeah. And I think that's not talked about enough where like when we're trusting our gut or following like an intuition, it's like we have to reach that peak level of discomfort. We have a whole episode about it. I know a lot of people resonate with that in fitness and with a huge career change because it is scary. I think talking about it more makes it doable for a lot of people to like take that leap. But I also think like when we ignore it for so long, that's when it gets like to the worst point. I know for me, whenever I ignored a change, I had like anxiety attacks and my mom's like, you're ignoring something, you know, you need to change something. Otherwise you're going to be where you're at 6 months from now, which is a scary feeling. So when you were at that moment where you quit and wanted to get into fitness, did you have any idea that everyday athlete would be the thing that was your ultimate passion?
I really never did. Like, I kind of always thought like I would maybe be like a strength coach or, you know, just something kind of in the realm of like strength and conditioning or basically just a very traditional job. I never thought of it as like even something entrepreneurial. I know like even me and you talked about that when I was like kind of at my wit's end. We were talking about different ideas of like what would fitness look like for me. I just knew that it was something that I absolutely loved and was always a part of my life through every piece of adversity I ever went through. I never knew it would build into what the everyday athlete is or this whole brand that I've, you know, grown into. But at first it was just like, I know I love fitness. I know I love training. And like Jeremy Scott always says, he's like, you can love all this stuff, but do you love helping other people do it? And it was kind of like that risk where it was like, I had to risk trying. And ironically, like I just remember listening to guys like Jeremy Scott, especially Jeremy Scott, and like hearing him talk on his podcast. And I'm like, I want to do that. Like, I don't know really how to do it or what to do or how to even make sense of it, but I just know I want that. Like, that sounds really cool to me. And that sounds like it would really fire me up every single day. And that's when the clarity started to happen. And a lot of that did come from the personal development. Like, in those trying times, like, I didn't go to therapy. I probably should have, looking back. But like, the one thing I fell back on was the personal development and like internally getting insanely self-aware with myself. Cause it's not comfortable. Like, when you become self-aware, like, in that moment, I'm like, I now have to do something about it. I now have to take control of my situation and pivot and change. And it fucking sucks because I just, you know, built up this 401k, you know, I, you know, have this, I'm climbing the corporate ladder. I'm doing all this shit. And like, I didn't have a safety net. Like, I literally had those savings. Like, I pulled those savings out. Like, that's all I had. Like, if I either had to make it or I didn't. Like, I really didn't have a job. I didn't have like, my parents weren't like, hey, we're going to give you a bunch of money. Like, I was completely on my own. So like, for you people out there, like anybody out there who really is struggling, like, you really sometimes have to take that risk. I know not everybody can do it, you know, but I know for me, I had to take that leap to sink or swim, literally.
And one of my favorite quotes, I think it's Mel Robbins. It's like, no one's coming to save you. And I think when we have that mentality of like, oh, someone's going to solve this for me, you know, like,
yep,
it keeps you stuck long term. And so I think that that was a huge pivotal moment where you realize like, I'm the only one in control of this. But I do know from witnessing this story and witnessing other parts of your life that having support of like your family, especially, I know recently you made a post about your dad. So like, what pivotal moments do you think that his support, because I know for me, like, there were moments where my mom's like, oh, you quit your job. Like, I believe in you. Like, I wouldn't be where I am today without that. So like, for you, what were those pivotal moments of support that got you here?
Yeah, this was super dope. I did a post about this with my dad the other day, but he just always was like so encouraging of everything, like literally from the beginning, like, you should try the sport lacrosse. That turned into literally a scholarship to Ohio State. When I wanted to quit, you know, the lacrosse team and join the football team, he was like, that's fine. Like, we'll figure it out. Like, I guess we'll get these student loans, like, whatever. I mean, it was so worth it, you know, looking back, but, you know, he just always supported me, like, no matter what. Like, there was, it was never a no. Like, there was never like, no, Zach, like, you can't do this. It was always just like, we'll kind of find a way, and I'll help you and I'll guide you. And so it was very much so like that, you know, with my corporate job, where it was like, he knew how miserable I was, and he saw it. He even talks about this now. I mean, I know he's told you this too. Like, he knew, like, I was going through it. And so he knew I had to get the fuck out of it. And so I think, like, he just cared more about, like, me and my mental health than me staying in some corporate job.
So now that you have the support of people in your life and you have, like, the answer of, okay, the next thing for me is fitness, how do you get to where you are today with Everyday Athlete?
Yeah. So I remember, like, when I was in between, like, leaving that job, well, I quit the job. And then I was potentially going to get in another job. And that's when Christina was like, you have this downtime, like, you've always wanted to get this certification, like, why don't you just get your training cert? And so I did. I ended up, you know, getting my training certification. And ironically, I always tell this story to, like, even some of my clients and even people who I talk to about, like, you know, learning a lot of the stuff that I learn now. But I kind of talked about this early in the podcast, but I've always loved fitness. And I've always been so interested, like, so interested in the subject matter revolving around fitness. And so while a lot of people, you know, who get into this profession, they kind of, like, aren't, they don't, like, do that kind of, like, due diligence, and then they just, like, get the cert and then they learn everything. But, like, this whole entire time, like, as an athlete, I was always asking my strength coaches, like, why are we doing this? Or, like, you know, asking, like, the, well, not like why, they'd probably hit me in the face, but, like, just always, like, asking, like, the deeper reason, and, like, always observing and, like, learning and soaking everything up that I did as an athlete in the gym, and especially with, like, my strength coaches at Ohio State. And just, like, I always, like, just loved training. I always loved working out. So I was just like a sponge. I was just, like, soaking it all up. Like, I could tell you, like, a lot of the guys that I, ironically, guys that I train now who I also played with, like, couldn't even regurgitate anything that we did at Ohio State. I could tell you every little thing that we did training wise. Like, literally, I was always just so focused and paying attention to it. And then even, like, post football, like, just trying to figure out, like, you know, how do I get this outcome? How do I achieve this goal or this result, you know, with my fitness and health? Like, that was always a part of my life. And so, like, post football, I was always, like, I always say, like, my curiosity was, like, the best thing that ever happened to me in relation to health and fitness, because I literally, I would say I've learned more through my curiosity than any certification, any textbook, literally, that has taught me. Like, literally just, like, going out on my own, looking at the research, looking at, you know, published articles and things like that online, and just, like, finding the answer, like, always finding out why, like, why this, why that. And so, like, that caused me to learn so very much about health, about fitness, about nutrition, especially, because that was another area that I always was so interested in. And so, you know, all of that kind of, like, due diligence that I did on my own, mixed with me now getting my certification, you know, in the nutrition and in the, you know, training. And then also, like, reading more books, even I know, even, like, after I became a trainer, I've done even more continued education, but, like, all of that just came together, and I was able to, like, train my first client, who literally at the time, like, we were trying to scope out gyms that I would potentially train at and build my business, because Chris had been there and done that. And she was kind of, like, showing me the ropes on how to do that. And luckily, like, I found this awesome gym, Colossus, you know, in Columbus. And that's where I really wanted to start my business. And my first ever client, I'm still training him literally to this day. So shout out, you know, to you, Lonnie Brown, first ever client, literally. And we just crushed it. You know, I was able to take all of this knowledge and all this balled up kind of, like, yeah, just knowledge that I had. And I'm like, here's now a test dummy, you know, ironically, my first ever client, to just, you know, take all of this and now apply it. And we crushed it. You know, I think he lost like 50 pounds and, like, you know, got super fit, you know, crushes it literally to this day. And so it really just kind of built from there, and built my in-person training. And then, you know, I decided I wanted to expand more online and reach more people. And then that's when, you know, I started to take the online route. But it really was, you know, it started with, you know, that first client in person, and then built from there.
And I think that for a lot of people who, like, see us doing what we're doing now, it may seem like it was easy for us, for example. But I think that a huge part of your journey to where you are today, even though you've accelerated and, like, far surpassed where I was, like, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years in this business, I think a big season was, like I did with bartending. Like, I was working around the clock, like, kind of running myself into the ground and trying to figure out, like, how does this season of life that's temporary get me to where my, you know, my end goal is. And for you, I know that there was a season of life where, like, you were just around the clock, like, working multiple jobs, trying to grow your business. And then you're like, I'm going to start this podcast. So you were doing the most in that season. So, like, talk us through that too.
Yeah, absolutely. So that is a small little detail I left out. But whenever I got, you know, my first client, Lonnie, that I was just talking about, you know, it took some time to build that book of business with my in-person clientele. And thank God, like literally at the exact same time, and this is just where like these freaky things kind of come out of nowhere. But I remember we were literally in my Drayton Park apartment over there in Grandview. And, you know, I got a text or a call from Jackson Hayes, one of my old teammates. And I knew that he was a strength and conditioning coach. And he was like, hey, man, I just saw you became a trainer. You know, we have a position at this sports performance facility, which also got a ton of experience from working with him there. But he's like, hey, we have this, you know, salaried position. You'd only work X hours. You could still run your business and do this. And I'm like, well, shit, this is it's literally exactly what I needed. So that was a huge, I would say like across this whole trajectory, that was definitely an area where I did get lucky, where like that opportunity aligned perfectly. Like that was definitely some luck there. And I was able to take that position and work with Jackson. So I was able to get a nice cushion of a salary from a sports performance facility. What were the hours? I think I was working like some days were 1 to 7 and then other days were like six to two.
I remember specifically because this was when I fully went online and I'm like, wow, like what a life, you know, I can just like work from home all day. But then we were between two apartments.
Oh my God.
Like,
yeah. This was a hustle
both
season.
Both dogs. We were at this point in our relationship where like we had accelerated. We were like basically living together, staying together every single night, but in two different apartments. So we would be like alternating houses. So like I knew your schedule. I'd make dinner. You come pick up Bane, you'd leave, and like just we were like grinding every single day. Like,
this is good context.
Yeah. So it was like a hustle. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like how is he gonna maintain this long term? Like from the outside looking at him, like, I don't think he will be able to, you know, do both long term because it was a grind of a schedule. But it was like, yeah, 6 to 2. And on the days you were working in the morning at this job, you were training in the evening at classes. So you were working like doubles every day. And for
I was working doubles, yeah.
Serving doubles, like that's exhausting. And doing it in an entrepreneurial sense is really hard too. So it was flip-flopping every other day. Like you would be working basically a full shift at one job, going to train at night, training your clients in the morning, working that shift in the afternoon.
Yeah, it would literally be, because I'm remembering now, it'd be like I would have it, I literally had a 5 a.m. client on the shifts that I would work the 1 to 7. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so it was literally like, so that's a 6 hour shift, 1 to 7. And then I was doing like 6 to 7 hours before that, where I was doing like 5 a.m. to like the noon. Basically, like starting client was at like 5 a.m. And then I was training the rest of my clients that morning. I would like come home, maybe most of the time I would get like lunch on the go, and then would go to the gym and then work my entire shift, you know, from the 1 to 7. So I was going like 5 a.m. to 7 p.m. on those days. And then flip-flopping the next day. And I remember that was definitely a season where it was like, I need to start building up my book of business so I can leave this salary job, make enough money from my in-person clientele where I'd get more time back and earn more money.
Yeah. And I think that season, it was really cool to showcase this perspective that I've always had of like, you have to do the work now and like be a student of life, like you were like researching and preparing for what was next, even though you don't know what is next. Like the work you're doing in personal development and studying and getting experience and testimonials, like right now is preparing you for what's next. And I remember that morning when you got that text from Jackson, it was like the craziest thing where you were like, okay, now I'm building my clients. I wish I'm always off by like 2 p.m. I wish I had something that was like 2
yeah.
p.m. on. And literally in that moment, you got that text and it was the most bizarre thing.
That was wild. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like I did get lucky. Shout out to you, Jackson.
Yeah.
Save my ass. I've told you that a bunch of times, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, what's cool is like you were ready for it. Like you weren't like, okay, now what do I do? Like
right.
I have to prepare for strength and conditioning because you were already doing that work. And I think that that's a huge thing that a lot of people can learn is just like, you have to do the work now to prepare for what's next. Even if you don't know what that next thing is, like looking inward, doing the work is preparing you. And so when the opportunity strikes, you're able to jump right in.
100%.
And then you had to do another transition from that salary job to being like, okay, now I'm fully working for myself and building everyday athlete before I even knew what that looked like. So let's hear it.
Yeah. So that was really challenging too, because, you know, anytime, and anybody who like works in sales knows this, like if you're on like a full commission job, like it's stressful. Like your income is totally predicated off of your inputs. So like, I couldn't have a bad day. I couldn't, like, I no longer, it was like, I just couldn't have a bad day. I couldn't take any steps back. I couldn't get comfortable. Like at that moment, it was like, you got to go, like, you got to go balls to the wall and you got to build this thing. And so luckily, like, I remember it was a point where like, I was able to bring on some more clients enough to be able to like make a decent amount of money just doing my in-person training. And that's when I left the salaried position. And I was like, it was kind of a risk because I even remember I had to lose a little bit of money at first to be able to free up the time to even go harder in that. But yeah, so then ended up, you know, lucky enough, I was able to, well, not lucky enough, I was able to work hard enough and, you know, really started putting myself out there on social media as well. You know, just showing kind of like my knowledge and showcasing the way I like to train, the way I like to train my clients. And then luckily I was able to get some like referrals from my current clients and it just built my book of business. And then that's when I started, you know, really training all day one-on-one clients in person. And then once again, like Christina said, you know, it kind of went from like that unsustainable kind of hustle of working both jobs to then like a little bit more sustainable, but still, I mean, cause I had to, you know, work really long days in that gym to, you know, realizing and seeing the freedom that Christina had and saying, you know, well, I can do that too, you know? And so that's when I started to build out more of my online presence and I, you know, invested in business coaching over the last couple of years, you know, to really kind of take, you know, this business to the next level. And that's really when, you know, through this business mentorship and this coaching, you know, the big point of it is like niching down, like really finding who is your avatar, like who is the individual that you want to work with specifically, like not like, oh, I want to work with a bunch of men. No, like what kind of men? What is like their age? What do they do? What is their background? And so like I had to really dive deep and it just became so obvious to me, you know, what did Zach need those years back? Like who did I need in that moment? And that's when the Everyday Athlete was born, where it was like, I needed a resource to help me in my achievement of life after sport of what is the next thing going to be and how can I use the catalyst of fitness, of nutrition, of personal development to propel me in the direction I'm meant to go. And that's when the Everyday Athlete was born and it makes so much sense as you can all hear.
It really does. I had like chills when you first said that name and like built out the brand. It just makes so much sense.
On the way to our engagement.
Yeah. Yeah, that was such a cool story. I don't know. We have talked about that.
We have on the podcast, yeah.
Yeah, but it was cool. And I think that a lesson we learned that weekend was like when you turn off the noise and you just like go out in nature, as silly as it sounds, we were just like by ourselves thinking about like and just talking it through. And once again, just unplugging is where the magic happens. So obviously now the Everyday Athlete is the brand that it is and you're working with a bunch of former Zs who really needed like that catalyst of fitness to like show them the way, no pun intended. But I think that there's a lot of different like parallels in like business and fitness. So like what advice would you give to someone right now who's like a former athlete who's struggling and trying to like figure out what's next? Like identity is gone completely. Like what advice would you give them?
Well, you have to find out like what are the foundational practices or things that just like keep you level-headed? Like for me and like for many of the everyday athletes, it's fitness. It's, you know, working our physical training and working our physical body. Like I know when I'm not doing that, I don't feel right. And so I know that like, no matter what it is, no matter what the goals are, no matter what I'm trying to achieve from the fitness, it's something I'm always going to be doing. It's something I've always have done and I always will be doing until I always joke with you until I'm literally in the fucking grave. Like I'm going to be working out, exercising, moving my body. I don't care what it looks like. I'm going to always be doing it. Like that is my foundational practice. That's what keeps me. And so you have to have those foundational things like the health, like the fitness to keep you going outside of, you know, maybe what you're doing for work or what you're maybe doing for your job. Cause I even know for a lot of my everyday athletes, like they may not be super fulfilled in what they're doing in their job, but them being a part of this community and the everyday athlete community is what brings them that joy and fulfillment and that purpose, which was my intent. That's what I wanted to provide because I didn't fucking have that when I was struggling, when I was going through it, when I was, you know, really, really feeling like shit and feeling down and out. Like I had nothing like that. You know, it was once you're done, there's nothing like what the everyday athlete is. And so I wanted to create this community and this, you know, opportunity for these guys to use those catalysts in their own life, you know, but it goes a step further than that. It really goes into that personal development where you have to get so critical and self-aware if you want to feel better. And, you know, it sounds kind of counterintuitive because it's like, you know, let me just run from my problems. Let me just run from this. But you, the more you run, the shittier you'll feel. So you have to literally attack those feelings head on and get so real with yourself and go so deep. And like no guys do that. Like it's very rare. The ego drives all of us. And it's like, I don't want to look bad. I don't want to, you know, admit to these issues I'm having. I don't want to admit to the fact I'm struggling with my purpose and my identity, even though I am. But you have to be able to put that ego aside and go so hard internally. And that's the advice I would give for any former athlete that's out there or someone that's stepping into that, you know, just realm of life after sport. You have to get so real with yourself and self-aware with yourself on what you really want and what you really desire in life, because that's going to be your compass rose.
Yeah. And I think that knowing your story and knowing you so well, obviously, that dropping the ego and being so self-aware is like what has led you to where you are
100%.
In both fitness and in business. So I think that's great advice for anyone listening, because I think that holds a lot of people back from achieving results or success, no matter what area of business or, you know, career that you're in. So any final words for the Life Rewired listeners or any former athletes out there?
I feel like we just went hard for 1 hour.
That's funny.
But no, I just think that we just, no matter if you're a former athlete or just an everyday person, no matter what your background is, you know, who you are, it's just so important to be so real with yourself and aligned with yourself, because we live in this world right now, guys. Like, I talk about this all the time and probably piss people off on Instagram because people don't want to realize this, but we just live in this mundane world where no one wants to think for themselves. No one wants to make decisions for themselves. Everyone wants to escape with sports, with politics, with all this bullshit happening externally in our lives. And no one wants to actually like get real on themselves. Like, that's why I always tell Christina, that's why like I fucking love sports, but I'm not going to escape in sports and politics. I'm going to focus on my shit. How can I be a better person? How can I grow? How can I be better at my job and better in everything that I'm doing? A better partner for you, a better son, a better friend, a better trainer. Like, that's where I want to go hard. I don't want to fucking care about all this other bullshit stuff that doesn't matter, that everyone else focuses way too much on. But how can we get so real with ourselves and so focused internally on what we really want at the end of the day? Because that's happiness in my eyes. Like, that is true happiness. Take the money out of it. Take the job title out of it. Take all this literal bullshit out of it that everyone focuses so much on. Are you actually happy? Like, are you actually living a life where, you know, you wake up, you're like, I'm aligned with who I am. Like, I wear, like, I'm wearing an Avengers shirt right now. Like, I've got my dogs tattooed on my arm. Like, I would say my no fucks level is pretty high. So I just encourage all of you out there to get to that point where you can shed all this external jargon that we focus too much on and just get real on what you really want in life and start aligning yourself to that as soon as possible.
I think that is like the definition of rewiring your brain. It's like, what's the norm versus what ultimately is going to fulfill you and give you a life of happiness. So very on brand for Life Rewired podcast, but thank you so much for sharing your story. I feel like you guys will get so much from those lessons and these different seasons of life from Z. So we hope you enjoyed hearing both of our interviews, and we will see you guys next week.
Peace out, guys.